I have a bachelor in architecture, and I was the designer alongside Ellie, the planner. And just want to elaborate on some of the architectural points in the design. With regards to the FSR, the proposed attic does not satisfy part 3.8.2.2 of the National Construction Code or the BCA. To be deemed a habitable room, the height in the attic must be a minimum of 2.2 metres for at least two-thirds or 67% of the floor area. So in regards, in our calculation, the attic space proposed only achieves a height of 2.2 for only 4.8 square metres of the attic, which represents only a figure of 45%. So this alone demonstrates that the space above the garage is not fit or fit to be utilised as a habitable space, as per the NCC. With regards to overshadowing, just elaborating on what Ellie mentioned earlier, as per the shadow diagrams, it can be demonstrated that number 39 is not impacted after the hour of 11, say 11 or 11:30 on the winter solstice. The principal open space and living spaces receive the required minimum of 3 hours access between the hours of 12 and 3 p.m. It should also be noted that the overshadowing impacts generated from number 2 Cromwell Street, that sits due north to number 39 Marion and 37 Marion Street, that poses way more significance in terms of the shadow impacts than the proposed attic does. And finally, with regards to shadowing, can be argued that the existing tree canopy to the rear of 39 and 37 casts the most shadow impact upon all of the open spaces south of the tree canopies. With regards to streetscape, the existing and all but dilapidated garage at number 37 does not do much for the visual impact of the locality. It can be argued that the proposed attic and dormer roof form significantly enhances the streetscape along Cromwell Street as it echoes the form and high-pitched roof massings along Cromwell Street. And finally, with regards to the storage space, again, in such an inner suburban setting, it can be argued that the garage attic storage will add a high level of residential amenity to the occupants of 37 Marion Street without generating any negative impacts upon the adjoining properties, whilst enhancing the visual amenity of the streetscape along Marion and Cromwell Streets. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Joffsewski, do you wish to speak to us?
So just in regards to a couple of the points that the neighbour at 39 made, in regards to the leasing of the property, I did, and we did discuss this morning, I mentioned it, that it's only a temporary thing. When I was told that the garage was being refused, it no longer felt viable in terms of me living there without having that storage space. I have a family of five, including two teenage sons. They have bicycles and all sorts of other stuff that we need to store. And upstairs is all completely for bedrooms, so we can all live in. So there's not a lot of storage area. And if I don't have it, it really is not viable. And at the moment, the property market isn't good, so the intention was to rent it out. If I can't go and get the garage space, then I'll just simply sell it when the market improves. And that's basically it. The reason why it was deleted in the initial DA was because council said they wouldn't approve it with the garage. So we then proposed a different design. The original design was sort of more square and bulky towards the neighbour at number 39. This design slopes away, the actual building form slopes away from the neighbour, and that's the reason why we thought, because we're changing the DA, potentially it could get approved. So, I mean, you know, from a person perspective, not so much maybe a planning perspective, the fact that the neighbour can get, you know, plenty of, you know, all the light that's required for the backyard, as far as I understand, or the minimum amount, you know, makes me feel that I'm not really impacting them as much as they say I am. And it also has an effect on me as well. So it's not just the neighbour's consideration, but me as a person living and buying the property to have some rights as well to be able to develop the property in a way that's good for me, but not in a necessarily a big negative impact for the neighbours. So, and the other thing that I picked up on doing some research was I understand that garages in most other inner west councils are not counted as FSR. At Leichhardt Council, they are. And therefore, that's the reason why the FSR is also more significantly over. And I mean, the fact I bought the property with a garage means that I have no choice in that matter, whether to not have any parking space. So I just feel that potentially, you know, that may be sort of set aside in terms of the FSR and maybe look at it without that, because I don't have a choice. I bought the property with a garage. So as I said, I mean, this is the impact. The impact to me is that, you know, it's no longer viable for me to keep it the way it is if I can't get the garage extension. That's all. Any questions, if anyone has questions? Thank you.
Sorry.
Yes.
The garage is quite narrow and considering not that large.
Correct.
If there was no attic extension, if that's just the garage, mm-hmm. is that something that would be acceptable to you, or is it like...
Well, I mean, it would be better. Like, I mean, it'd be preferable than to nothing, because obviously getting that extra extension at the back means I can get more of a car in. You know, having that building to the boundary, which is... Yeah, sure. that would be better, absolutely, than not having anything at all.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. A question of the planner. I'm quite familiar myself with the definition of gross floor area, and there's nothing in the definition that I understand that would exclude an attic or exclude something that doesn't comply with the BCA in terms of not being counted as gross floor area. What's your reasoning to say that it isn't gross floor area?
When you read the definition strictly, I've got it in front of me. Do you have a copy there?
Definition
in
where?
Of gross floor area.
In the LEP.
From the LEP, yeah. So it does talk about it includes habitable rooms in a basement or an attic. Okay.
That's right.
In my view, the attic isn't habitable.
But it doesn't mean it doesn't exclude GFA for storage area and in any building or in any property.
Sorry, what was that?
Just because it nominates that it includes, it doesn't mean that a storage area is excluded.
Yeah, the only if it's the standard definition, the only storage that's excluded is basement storage.
Correct, storage, yes, but this is also an attic, so it's
it's
not habitable.
Attic for the purpose of storage.
Storage.
It's not the attic for the purpose of being a habitable room, so it's storage, it's above ground storage, so therefore it's GFA.
Yeah, I was going to allude to it earlier in my talk. Even if what we're talking about is 9-10 square metres in floor area, if we remove that away from the discussion, let's look at it from a streetscape point of view. You know, the material difference is not all that much, and it's already been approved well over site coverage, well over FSR.
Yeah, that's the merit issue, I understand
yes.
that. My understanding is that a storage area is always included as FSR.
Okay.
You wouldn't normally exclude it. That's my understanding.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for all that. We've come to a determination, again unanimous. By way of explanation, we are going to approve the development absent the attic. So what we're going to do is grant a deferred commencement consent and the deferred commencement condition is a requirement that amended plans be submitted, deleting the proposed attic, and showing a maximum height of the garage structure not to exceed RL 33.85. Otherwise the application will be approved subject to conditions, and in doing so the Inner West Planning Panel on behalf of the Council as the consent authority supports a variation to site coverage and floor space ratio prescribed by clause 4.3A3B and 4.4 of the local environmental plan, as it is satisfied that the applicant's request has adequately addressed the matters required to be demonstrated by clause 4.6 of that plan. The proposed development would be in the public interest and is consistent with the objectives of the particular standard and objectives for development within that zone. And it is approved, again, subject to the deferred condition, subject to the deferred development consent condition, will be approved subject to the recommended conditions. Recommended deferred commencement condition relating to the owner's consent for the Chinese tallowood tree is deleted. You don't need that.
Because if you don't have the attic, it won't impact on the tree.
Yeah, the reason is if you don't have the attic, it won't interfere with the tree. So that's why draft deferred commencement condition 1A is deleted and substituted by the deferred commencement condition that I've just read out. Oh yes, and there is a further requirement that an arborist's report is to be prepared demonstrating the crossover, you'll have to have a new crossover, will not impact on the street tree. All right? So that will be the determination of the panel, again unanimous. Thank you very much. So with that we can move back to item 7. Ms. Chua has a conflict of interest and will absent herself from this determination. Right, you can go. Item 7 is the planning proposal, the council-initiated planning proposal to include numbers 73 and 73A, the Boulevard, Dulwich Hill, as items of environmental heritage in Schedule 5 of the Marrickville Local Environmental Plan. We had a look at these properties earlier and we understand why the listing is proposed. We have the reports that have been furnished to us, so we will hear those who wish to address us. Mr. Catania, are you here? Do you want to add what you told us on site? We did have a look at your property and we saw what you are in the process of doing. So if you want to add anything to what you told us on site, you'll have to come forward and speak into the mic. For the record, your name and address. You have to press the button.
Alexander Catania, 73A, the Boulevard, Dulwich Hill.
Thank you.
So further from this morning, I'd like to add that my background, my profession is I'm also actually a real estate agent and valuer, and I've been a resident in the area for a long time. So, when you're dealing with people and marketing properties, the heritage aspects of the property is what appeals to people. I believe it is in the best interest of the owners to keep that there, and it's also just for the neighbouring properties and the surrounding. These are attributes which not only add to the properties themselves, but they add to the area and the whole locale, and it makes the suburb what it is. So, heritage in the area is, and these type of homes are becoming rarer and rarer every day. I mean, a lot of properties were resumed for the West Connects and as such, and I'm sure there will be other government projects in the future and other rezonings and whatnot. So I believe it is important that council has taken the right step and taken action to try and preserve the homes. Dr. Robertson's and Dr. Rosenberg's reports were quite comprehensive, and they're professionals in the industry. I believe their recommendations should be taken with strong consideration and put forward. And, Dr. Robertson suggested as well the hand detailing and taking archive of everything's in the property. But I mean, it's you've got the chance to protect the real thing and the real item. So, I'd think it's should grab that chance while we can. Most properties that are within our heritage conservation area or heritage listed at the moment, these properties are quite unique, as you saw, just with the size of the rooms, the intertwining between different periods and the features and the finishes. But also, most properties which are listed at the moment or in conservation areas don't have the interiors protected. So having the interiors protected is something that will further protect it and preserve it in the future. And all it really means is that any future alterations or additions have to have a heritage consultant there. So essentially, I think it's just the heritage listing is insurance for the for the sake of the properties, for council, and for the neighbourhood. And keep in mind the properties are currently functioning. They are occupied properties, so it's quite sustainable development as such that they've got a long life, and they've got long life in them still continuing as homes. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Davies? Or Mr. Pickles? Who's going first? Are you going to do the job, Mr. Pickles?
I'm going to, in a sense, introduce the propositions on behalf of the owner of number 73. Could I inquire whether the panel has received Mr. Davies' material? The additional photographic evidence of ingle nooks and timber panelling?
Yes.
Good. Can I first just give a little background? The panel would be aware that this was the subject of an appeal in relation to the interim heritage order. And you've read the court's judgment. I'm grateful for that. Now, critically, the threshold, of course, for reaching the point which the commissioner was required to consider is quite low, and that is whether or not the dwelling is likely, on further inquiry or investigation, to be found to be of heritage significance. Now, on that question, the commissioner concluded two things. Firstly, importantly, the relevant test of whether on further inquiry it's likely to be found to be of heritage significance was on the basis of a real chance that it might be. So quite a relatively low threshold. We're now at the point where the council is being asked to consider a planning proposal to list this as an item of heritage. So the question now becomes whether it in fact is of heritage significance. There are two matters that the commissioner found warranted further investigation. The first was the significance or otherwise of the builder, and the second thing was the rarity or otherwise of the interior panelling and the ingle nook. Now, the council, subsequent to that decision, has undertaken no further inquiry. Dr. Robertson has reviewed some, but not all of the evidence that was before the court. Dr. Robertson evidently didn't have the joint report of the experts, so his criticisms of Mr. Davies' evidence doesn't take into account the joint report. And secondly, council has done none of the things that would be necessary to take the next step to determine whether or not the ingle nook and the timber interior is indeed rare. Now, Mr. Davies has undertaken that further work, which he has provided in the letter of the 27th of August. That work, plus Dr. Robertson's already he has already found there are 8 examples of inglenooks on the state register. The examples identified by Mr. Davies comprise another 6 more. That demonstrates, we would submit, that the rarity upon which Dr. Robertson initially founded his opinion can't be sustained. The material demonstrates that the interior is contained in other heritage-listed homes and in other homes that are within heritage conservation areas. And when it comes to the second matter, which the Commissioner indicated required further consideration, the builder, Hoken & Co., has not been identified of any significance. Dr. Robertson says that goes to some trouble to say in his supplementary notes that the report of Sue Rosen, the report, the statement of MBRS as to the history is not accurate. Then he proceeds to set out the factual material from the council's records, which demonstrates precisely that it is accurate, that the builder of the building was G. Hoken & Co., not William Mitchell, which is the basis for Dr. Robertson's original report and Sue Rosen's original report, and indeed that the owner of the land was Hyman. Those 2 things were conclusively proved by the research undertaken by NBRS and Urbis, and despite saying in the further report that the examination of the source document shows that the NBRS statement is not accurate, in fact, Dr. Robertson proves that it is by his recitation of the facts. So once those things are understood, we say that, quite simply, this building doesn't meet the threshold because the further material demonstrates the builder is of no significance and the rarity of inglenooks and timber panelling, interior panelling of this kind has not been demonstrated. And I would just simply then defer to Mr. Davies to take you through his additional research, unless you have any further questions of me.
Yes, Mr. Davies. All right, thank you. I'll see if there's any questions.
The timber panelling that you referred to in this, was this the one here on page 3 of your report?
Yes.
Like, just my looking at the photographs we have of the interior of the property on page 357 and 358 of the council officer's report. The panelling looks very similar to me. Is there something about the panelling in the subject property that is makes it of less significance of this one here that looks quite similar?
This is his property.
Sorry, my mistake. I thought, is there a photograph of the ones that you're referring to that are listed, the interiors? You refer to a property in Summer Hill that had panelling?
The Summer Hill one, but unfortunately I didn't actually include all the photos from the Summer Hill photo. But what it does show in that particular photo one is the very sophisticated mission interior, really based, as I've said in that report, on the green and green interiors that Robertson talks about and that influence from California in a very highly crafted style, rather than being what we call a representative mission interior that might have come out of, by a builder or in a kit example. Now, that might be important in a house that was, I think, a very good example of its type as a whole, or hadn't been degraded by the additions that we have here, or in a context where we felt that it was contributing in a broader sense to the to the municipality, but it is quite standard. So what I'm saying is that yes, the photo one, I'm afraid I could have given you some more photos of the interior of that house, which does have more of the attributes of the mission interior than is just shown in that room. But what that room does show you is that very high quality fireplace, surround
No, that's fine.
The panel would like to hear from the council's planner. Oh, there he is. Couldn't see him. You've heard what Mr. Davies has said. We'd like to hear what you say about that.
Yeah. In terms of the technical heritage questions, we've got our heritage advisor, Neil Macken, who's here as well, who I would defer to on technical matters. If you had a question about the planning proposal or process, I was, sort of cover that. But is there anything specific?
I do have a question about the process.
Yep.
That the IDO refers to the fact that the IDO lasts until such time as there is a council resolution to list the item.
Yes.
So the council seems to have interpreted that as all there needs to be is a resolution tonight, as it were, subject to whatever the panel says, and that IDO then has given some sort of effect. But wouldn't the point of listing the item be when that planning proposal is made and gazetted?
Well,
just getting a gate. You haven't got a gateway determination. There won't be a gate. There'll be a gate. There's a long process to go to before the actual LEP is gazetted.
Yes,
does
the matter
IDO
is
continue on.
Yes, the matter is with the creating of an interim heritage order. It does last 12 months under the legislation, but the way it's structured under the council's interim heritage order, it requires after a 6-month period that there be a resolution to whether it wants to seek a planning proposal to go to gateway, and at that point, if council resolves to continue with that, then that basically allows it to continue for the full 12 months, giving the time to actually get a gateway and then to exhibit it and to basically make it an item. So that's how it's structured.
So where it says that the IDO will lapse 6 months from the date that is made unless the local council has passed a resolution to place the item on the heritage schedule of a local environmental plan. So
all you need to do is make a gateway resolution.
It's not to actually basically get a council resolution to send it to gateway. Yes, that's just to basically get the interim heritage order to continue the 12-month view to go to the gateway to get it to seek to basically.
It wouldn't matter how long it took for the Department of Planning to consider gateway if it seemed to be on exhibition. In the meantime, the
Well, for this, it's protected under the interim heritage order for 12 months. So we'd be obviously saying to the Department of Planning, we need this to be expedited to get it resolved. Because obviously we've still got to go through the process of exhibiting it and then going forward in that process. But in terms of the immediate thing, we need council to decide whether at this stage whether it wants to go forward or it could go forward, and if it wishes to go forward, then that would extend the interim heritage order for 12 months. Yep. Any other question around the process? Otherwise, did you want to ask any heritage technical matters?
We're in a position where we've been given this report by Urbis on the 27th of August, very late. It has not been assessed by any council officer. The council's heritage advisor. So we only have that to go on at the moment.
Hmm.
That's our difficulty.
Sorry, what was that?
So as a minimum, we need someone from council to address the issues raised by Mr. Davies, as a minimum. And
Can I get our heritage advisor, Niall, to make some comments on that?
Niall Macken, I'm team leader for Heritage and Urban Design at Council. I've only just received this slightly before this meeting started too, so I guess I haven't had the opportunity to digest it fully. But I looked at the five examples that were cited in this attachment, and I note that I don't think any of the five are from the interwar period, so they're not directly relevant to the period of the building we're looking at the moment. They're also of a different scale of development than the building that's under question. And they're also, the majority of them are from areas outside the local government area, and part of the listing was about the significance to the local area. So they're not directly relevant in that regard either. But yeah, that's basically my comments. Our heritage specialist who prepared the heritage report hasn't had the benefit of reviewing this or responding to it. So I guess I can't take that any further at this stage.
Going to have to consider the matter. We'll take an adjournment and come back to the determination. All right. The panel of three, which constitutes a quorum, has come to a unanimous determination, which will now come up on the screen. We are prepared to adopt the recommendation, that is to support the listing of both properties, both 73 and 73A, the Boulevard Dulwich Hill, as items of environmental heritage in Schedule 5 of the Marrickville Local Environmental Plan 2011 as proposed in the Council report. It's up on the screen. So the reasons are it's not quite right. The decision of the panel is that the panel supports the findings, supports the listing The panel supports the listing. No. That's not right.
No, up the top.
It's right at the top. Mm. The panel, the decision of the panel is the panel supports the listing. Right at the top. No. Under decision of the panel, it should read the panel supports the listing.
73 and 73A,
the Boulevard. The Boulevard is in capitals. The capital T. Comma Dulwich Hill. Comma as items of environmental heritage. On Schedule 5, of Marrickville Local Environmental Plan, as proposed in the Council's assessment report. Full stop. New paragraph. The reasons for the panel's decision